Hi, and welcome to the Sustainable Socials Podcast. I'm AK Mulford.
And I'm Ann Kemp. We're here to help you grow your online community, develop holistic strategies for your brand, avoid social media burnout, and simply have more fun. Join us each week for a deep dive discussion into the world of social media and marketing mindset as a whole.
If you want even more social media and marketing support, join our community at patreon.com/sustainablesocials.
All right. Hello. Welcome this week to Sustainable Socials. We have a very special episode this week, and I am really happy that I get to introduce Michael Evans to our listeners today.
I'm excited to be here.
Michael is known to me. I got to know him as the co-founder of Ream, which is a new subscription-based service for authors, made by authors for authors. But there is a lot more to Michael Evans, and I'm just going to stop talking, and I'm going to let AK start asking some questions Michael to talk about like what you do, what you have written, and the places you have gone, because, oh my goodness, that's like...
Before we dive into all of the good details, though, could you just let our listeners know just like a brief little bit about you and kind of your journey so far?
Yeah. Well,
I know that's the hardest question. I always hate getting asked.
No, I feel like it goes in chapters, you know, like chapter one was the prologue was before I started thinking of myself as a creator. And then I think all the chapters, I've had chapters to my life as a creator, and prologue was really defined by just me writing like anyone and loving storytelling, but not really even knowing it was something possible that I could actually do, or even feeling like I was a storyteller. And I think I became a storyteller, and this was kind of my inciting incident in my life when I needed the story. And I needed the story when I found out that my dad, I loved him growing up. I still love him, of course, but my parents were divorced, and I found out that he was a sports gambler. And I found out that my relationship with him was not what I thought it was, because he had this addiction that he had hidden from years and had really hurt a lot of people in my family. And that caused me to feel like I had to process that somehow. And the way I got that out was by writing a story. And that story turned into a book. And then that story turned into two books. And it was a very angsty dystopian novel that was very much inspired by Hunger Games and Divergent, because that was the kind of the rage at the time. And I didn't think much of it, really, to be honest, outside of just I love doing it, until I saw this commercial on TV, oddly enough, from like a local small press that was talking about this thing called like self-publishing. And my mom then was looking it up, because she's like, you've written all these books, and she found Joanna Penn. And then that was like the like kind of impetus of like what got me into like, oh, okay, like this is a thing, you could be an indie author. So chapter one was me being an indie author and really sucked into that from like, let's call it 15 to 18. I had published 12 books during that time, actually graduated high school a year early to like write quote unquote full time, which is really like me saying, hey mom, like, will you let me live at home for a year? Cause technically I'm still 17 and, you know, I'm gonna go to work. And, you know, I was working at a resort and was saving up all my money and spending all of it on Amazon ads, covers and editors and Facebook ads, all this stuff. And by the end of that year, you know, that chapter ends, and there's a lot to get into of burnout and all this stuff that I faced and mental health problems with algorithms and ads and wanting to blow up really quickly as a writer. Mm. But then chapter two kind of started with YouTube, I'd say, which was a really, really intense chapter for me. And I kind of at that point had given up on being a writer. I thought that I wasn't a good enough storyteller to do that. But YouTube had started to gain some traction for me, because I was doing it just on the side. And I kind of went all in the most all in of all possible ways on YouTube, and had a lot of great adventures. I met a lot of great people, but also put myself in some really dangerous situations. And by the end of that, had this kind of reckoning where I realized that I had kind of like turned myself into an algorithm and was so desperate to try and have validation that I was a good enough storyteller and a good enough person that I was willing to do anything, maybe even risk my life, to try and create something that could get you know, views or get people to watch or get people to, you know, if we're talking in the context of, I know all the authors listening, you know, get someone to buy your books. And that started chapter three for me, which has been going on for, I'd say, about a year and a half now, which has been me realizing that I wanted to myself become a writer again, but felt like being an author and the ecosystem that existed to support us as authors wasn't aligned. And I wanted to build something that really helped me as an author first, like be able to realize my passion to try and be a storyteller in the creator economy and build a community with my fans that was focused more on the relationship and connection rather than retention. And I think that's what got me into the ideals that Reem has and the ideals of, you know, our vision being that storytellers were the world. And, you know, I met Amelia, which is, you know, there's all these stories here, but I met Amelia and, you know, while in college now have been working for the last like year and a half on building Reem, and we launched it about 2 months ago, which Reem is basically a better version of Patreon, but for fiction authors. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we're starting out as. And we're helping authors build a community of super fans and make recurring monthly revenues. So that's me. That's kind of my three chapters of my story up to this point. All of it has been a creator. All of it's been me really obsessed with this world of storytelling. But I think all of it's had its own ups and downs and lots of lessons learned.
I love that.
But I feel like so much of that resonates with so many people, like maybe on a much smaller scale, but like, I know for me, definitely like that feeling of starting off wanting to be an author, then kind of getting sucked into the marketing side of it enough. Like yeah. I've seen so many of my author friends kind of turn into influencers to the point where they're not even really writing anymore. And, you know, kind of like, like,
it's I ended up with a business
both, and then going through this huge burnout of like, why did I start doing this even in the first place? What was my why, you know, and then trying to come like kind of claw back to doing it in a more sustainable way, like in a way that's not going to break you. Cause I feel like all of it is so seductive and it can kind of like, burn you out so easily. Yeah. Sorry. What were you going to say?
Oh, just, I always laugh at that too, because of the fact that, I mean, that is why I ended up with a business, why I have a social media business and had a PR firm, because back in the day, I was 2011, 2012, got my first book. And then I went onto social media and I got so pulled in because I was naive eyes. And just like, they're like, oh, the publisher, let's see what your marketing plan is. And oh my God, you guys, that marketing plan had things on there like, okay, we're going to have a giveaway and we're going to fly people to the islands because my book was set on St. Kitts. Like, it was just, I had all of these amazing things because I've been working in marketing and thought I could pull all this stuff together. And then I quickly saw how that momentum can spiral. And if you don't know what you're doing, you go one way. And I ended up choosing the path to follow because I needed to make money at the time and was like, I want to make money. And so I'm going to do this business. But yeah, coming back and finding it sustainably, I came back over COVID because I had started doing social media years ago because I wanted to teach it to other people and to authors. And that's why everything kind of came back full circle to now. But yeah, it's that because you burn out, you do. Like, and that's for you to realize that at the place that you are and where you are with what you're looking at. And you've just got more to give at that point, don't you?
I think, you know, the burnout is interesting because I feel like it's this feeling of wanting to be somewhere and feeling like you're never actually gonna get there and what you're doing isn't getting there. Like, you want, burnout happens when you realize that like that dream you had isn't what you thought it was, and that you're just scraping by to try and get to that life that you thought you were doing. So you're, like you were saying, your why is so distanced from your now and your reality that you kind of are in denial and you don't actually try and maybe try and recenter yourself. And mm-hmm. I think it's really hard when you're kind of feels like you're on a treadmill a lot of times with whatever you're doing and producing content, really, because we're all producing content at the end of the day. And you don't really take the step back to be like, I'm not a machine. And also that I don't want my business to own me. I want me to own my stories. And too often we let, you know, specific metrics, specific, you know, ways of doing things that maybe aren't best for us rule over us and dictate what we consider is good. Like we let something else define what is good for us. And I think that's when we kind of like lose our agency as a people, as a collective, as individuals too. And I let myself do that, where I really got sucked up into a very specific idea of what I thought success was. And it's very tough because, you know, that success, I think most of the time with burnout, gets tied to money or some sort of other capitalist output that is important. Like you can't ignore these things, because we need to make money to make a living as a writer, we need to make money to make a living as a creative person. So you can't ignore it. But when you let certain metrics become your North Star that can't possibly be beaten every single time, you immediately get into this very, very toxic cycle. And I face this the most with YouTube because of how addictive YouTube's algorithm is and how addictive YouTube's dashboard is for creators. They're very good at it. And I think it's brilliant, but it's also really tough because they rank every video 1 out of 10 that you publish on the platform that's long form. And you can see like, oh, this video like got 2 out of 10. Oh, this video got 5 out of 10. This is not good enough. And you know, you have that 1 out of 10 feeling and it's like the best. But is every video literally going to outperform every video forever? Like, that's just impossible. Like, everyone's going to have that moment where it's like, I can't keep growing like I was. And like, it's just designed to make you feel like inadequate. Like, oh my God, that didn't do it. But meanwhile, these things are like an hour by hour thing where, you know, the book launches, the video gets posted, and you see the CTR, you see the retention, you see the sales, and you immediately panic because you're like, it's not what you thought it was when it's so early in the game. And then you feel yourself like going in these circles and wanting to like change that cover or you know, I'm going to go tweak that blurb 10 times, or I'm going to go pull that ad because it's like at a dollar CPC, but it's only spent a dollar. And you just go and panic. And I felt that feeling like so many different times. Yeah. And it's just the worst. It's just the worst. But I know you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, completely. Like,
yeah. Too much. I mean, and we talk to people all the time who will be saying like, you know, a video just didn't get the views, or something didn't, you know, like I thought more people would pre-order, or I thought whatever it may be. And it ruins their whole day, their whole week. Like even like one silly TikTok might just completely like not perform and just destroys their day. And they can't help but take it with them. And all of a sudden it turns into, I'm a failure, I'm not good enough, people don't like me anymore. Mm-hmm. Like it's amazing how quickly it can like spiral out. And I think we're constantly, especially as authors, we're always hustling, right? Like we're always trying to grind to like the next level of performance. And I feel like sometimes I like have to stop myself and be like, me from 2 years ago would like smack me from the right now for thinking that this wasn't good, you know? Yeah. But because we're constantly competing against ourselves and our peers around us, we're constantly feeling like if we don't one up ourselves, you know, that we're somehow failing, you know?
I think people forget to reframe and to change their own perspective. I know I do. And I've had to, like, this is why I have a support team now of friends to go to, like AK and some other friends of ours, go, this, I'm feeling this way right now. This thing has happened, because those are the people to, or within myself, to look at, like, say, I'm going to use a low view day on TikTok, because this is something that we've had clients come to us about, where they've, you know, shown AK and I and gone like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm only getting a 200 view or 300 view. Fantastic. Look at how many saves you've got. Look at how many, you know, forwards that you've, look at the likes and the engagement you've got on there. People don't see, what is it, the woods for the trees. They forget, they want that one metric that they've got their eye on to be viral, and they forget to look at the engagement and the goodness that they've got going on. You've got people commenting on your posts, and you actually have people saving it. So if you actually look at the engagement of this,
but stop seeing the real people, you know, like they stop seeing the real people who show up and really want numbers. To engage with them, which was like,
I was gonna say, it's also kind of a broken mindset too, though. Cause like, it's stuck in this idea of performance marketing.
Yes.
Being the end all be all.
Yep.
When most readers are not one click buyers. And if that's the case, then what are we doing optimizing for the one click buy, that cookie window conversion that we can see at the end of the day? Like every marketer, you know, just no matter what the industry, is obsessed with attribution, like absolutely obsessed with it. But if we're thinking about it from like what the biggest companies in the world have done for the last 50, 60 years, you don't see McDonald's running performance ads. You don't see car companies running performance ads often. The biggest brands in the world just want to make you feel something so that when you're ready, you're going to be there for them. And that brand marketing versus performance marketing really came to life for me in the last couple of days in two ways. Because I was actually been in New York City for the last couple of days at a Creator Camp event, which was a group of like 40 or 50 YouTubers who have anywhere between, actually a lot of TikTokers too, have anywhere between a couple million to sometimes a couple hundred thousand. Some even have 10,000 followers, but it's a very interesting group of creators that I was hanging out with. And I had one story that was related to the creators and then one related to one of their moms that I was staying with. So when it came to the creators, I was talking with them and they were having this huge problem with when communicating with brand deals, which we don't see as often in the author space, but we think about very similar. They want to maybe create a piece of art in their TikTok, their video, but the brand's so driven on driving conversion that they're unable to marry their creative visions together, and the deal ends up falling apart. And there's this inherent tension between what the audience wants, what's good for the audience in that moment, like creating a great story on TikTok, creating a great video on YouTube, and then this desire where you're creating almost selfishly from trying to get them to click and buy something, right? I mean, there's this way to marry that where you still want to drive awareness, but don't need to just create an ad everywhere. And this kind of went to the second level for me, where I was talking to someone's mom who heard that I was working on Ream and heard that we support authors. And she's like, I'm a huge reader. I'm like, that is so exciting. And I was talking to her, like, what are some of your favorite books? And we were talking for a little bit. And she was saying like really big authors, like everyone knows, like Nora Roberts. And I'm like, are you just saying this because you think I don't know any other authors? Because I actually might. So I was like asking her, like, really tell me, like, who are your favorite authors? And she's like, no, I honestly don't remember their names. I don't remember even the titles of the books. Mm-hmm. And that's like totally fine. That's totally fine. Like, that's her. She's reading hundreds of books. That's totally fine. But if we're trying to build a brand as an author and a connect with our readers, and our readers don't even remember us, like, oof, that's rough. So if we're thinking about performance marketing and that's all we're worried about, we're probably abandoning the metric that I love, which one of my friends, I think, came up with. Either way, I'm going to say he came up with it. And it's called a CPI, a community performance indicator, which
is, I like that.
What is the ratio of comments to views?
Yes.
What is the ratio of shares to views? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are you seeing in these other metrics that are tangible? We're not just putting fluff out here, but what other sort of reviews in the context of a book, reviews to buys, right? Like these sorts of things on TikTok, right? Like, how many readers are sharing? What are the hashtags around specific books correlated with ranking on specific ebook retailers, and which ones are having outsized hashtag performance compared to ranking? Like, these are the CPIs that, like, that's driving real brand value for those authors, where readers are talking and coming back to their future books. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you want to optimize more for that rather than just the view? It's not that views aren't important, but there's more to the story. And I think that those two stories in a roundabout way shared with me that, like, there's more than just the view.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
100%. Yeah. Like, I guess I always look at like TikTok. For me, going into it, I was a big naysayer. And I was like, I am not an 11-year-old. I don't need to be on TikTok. And that was my attitude as a business owner. And I had somebody say to me, a good friend of mine who pushed me and went, you're being that person right now. You need to get on there. And I was like, you're right. I am. I'm being a judgmental Judy, and I need to not be that person. So I will go on and I will show you you're wrong. And I got on and found a community. I went on as a sweet writer. I threw the spaghetti at the wall. I did all the things they tell you not to do when you go into social media marketing. And I did it, and I came out a happier person for it. I found readers that are spicy that will read what I write. I found a community. I found friends that I've taken with me from TikTok over to Instagram. I met AK.
We met on TikTok. We were living 10 minutes down the road from each other, but we both have American accents. So we figured neither of us were in New Zealand.
You live that close to each other? That's wild.
We did until they moved.
I know. But yeah, I mean, like, for me, I come from a face-to-face engagement background. So I used to like work at a zoo and work in conservation and work trying to get people to like talk to people face to face. And so for me, TikTok's like perfect because I just like chatting with friends via video format. And that's kind of the way I've always used my platform, is more just like talking to people, being silly, having fun, enjoying it. You know, and I think when people feel like you're enjoying it, they enjoy it too, you know? And when people hop onto my lives, I'm always like, hey friends, you know? And it's that kind of like community building side where I feel like I've, you know, some of these people feel like they've been on this journey with me since day one, you know, and feel invested in what I'm doing. And I feel like that's the thing that drives everything for me more than, you know, I actually spend a lot less energy, I think, than a lot of authors. And you know, you were saying before about like relationship and connection over retention, which I thought was like such a, like that should be on a t-shirt.
Yes, that is.
But like that feeling of like, I think more than a lot of authors, I spend less time trying to go out and reach for more random people to pull them in. And I spend a lot more time kind of like nurturing the people who are there. And that kind of level of engagement with those people pulls more people in, if that makes sense. And I feel like a lot of people are so focused on getting more of things that they forget to like value the people who are already in their communities, you know?
No, you're right. It's, we think about funnels when we actually have a loop. Like we think of social media as a funnel where we bring in a million people, and then you know, like 1,000 of them go from, you know, unaware to cold, and then you got some that are maybe clicking, and then you know, you have that funnel, that engagement funnel, and it's an engagement loop, because in reality, you know, you have 10 fans, you know, that go from not knowing you to now one knows you. And it's not just like the story ends there, that one fan brings in another fan and the loop continues, right? Yeah. So if you have a loop, then you actually want to focus on like what is driving like true, like viral coefficient in that loop, what's driving that loop forward faster. And oftentimes when you were saying it, I was like, you're a subscription marketer. Cause when we're in the Subscription Fathers Facebook group, when we talk about like subscription marketing, it's all about like that, like focus on your existing fans. You know, Walt Disney said this like a long time ago when he was building Disney World, which was, I don't want anyone to come out of here mad. I don't want anyone to come out of here sad, because it's way harder to get someone who doesn't know about this place to come rather than to get someone who already came here to come back. You know, it's 10 times harder. So I do everything to make that person happy. And I think oftentimes we're just stuck in this like casino mindset where we think of this big score. And I don't blame us for thinking that, because if anything, like we've been trained to think that way because of the brutal power law of publishing, because of like literally the business model of traditional publishers, which perpetuates still through this industry in terms of the mindset that like, you know, 0.1% drive all of their returns in terms of their books. Okay, well, if that's true, well, if you're not in the 0.1%, then I guess you're just left behind. And that has kind of been the mindset in publishing until now in the indie world. We actually can make a living, but we're still kind of vying for those 0.1% of spots as if we all can be there, but we can't. And then it's like this constant competition of churn, and it's a nightmare. And it's like, wait, no, there's another way where we can play this long game where, like you said, AK, like they've been on your journey. Like it's not just like, oh, I built a relationship with a fan because I created one TikTok. Like if a stranger waves you on the street, that was nice, but that's not a relationship yet. But if you start waving every day and seeing that stranger in the same place, all of a sudden that's not a stranger anymore. Maybe you've said hi, and maybe one time you go down and get coffee, aka they buy your book. So that would be like the goal. But how do you get them there? Like it's consistency over time. And that is trust. Like consistency and time equals trust. And trust is everything. And if we're so focused on, well, how do I blow up tomorrow? There's nothing about that that is consistent. That's all about these huge spikes, which again has been trained in us in this old traditional model that like I had myself that still perforates this industry, and we just have to like throw it out. We're in a different age now.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
I feel like I see a lot of this happen too with authors who will get that viral video or that spike and then kind of panic and not know what to do with it. And then it goes away. And they have no idea how to retain any of those people or get them to come back again. And then all of their content after that turns into kind of like this like scrambling, trying to like get another video like that happening. And they've completely ignored the people who are already there, kind of like rooting for them, you know?
Yeah, no, it's normal. And like, honestly, this is where slow growth is like so underrated. Like going viral is hard. And when I went viral, it was probably the worst thing that happened to me. And viral is relative, right? Like Mr. Beast going viral at this point, like, you know, I think that would have to mean for him, like, I don't know, a billion views, right? So like for him, it's just another day in the park to get 100 million views. But for me, when I went viral, it was like getting 250,000 views on a long form YouTube video. For me, that was like, I thought that was the pinnacle. I was like, this is insane. I have no idea what to do. Like all of a sudden, you know, I was making maybe $1,000 in a good month from, you know, book royalties. And this was, first of all, to be transparent, that's $1,000 in revenue. There's ad expenses, there's editing and cover costs. So talk about profit. There really wasn't any. But on YouTube, it was like, oh, I just made like $1,500 in AdSense last month. This is my third month doing YouTube. And I spent nothing. I had no expenses. So I was like, I am, you know, I'm rich. Like it felt like that. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I have no idea what's happening. And like, you immediately are like, oh my God, like, where is this going to go? How am I going to, wow. And I remember distinctly in that moment, like messing it all up. And I'll tell you how I messed it all up, because I went from like zero to like 10,000 subscribers or whatever, like definitely like an audience now, like I had an audience. And instead of being like, hey, y'all, like, let me focus on like, what does this audience want? Why did they really come here? I kept trying to basically beat down a formula that I thought existed that made that first video do well, to the point that that existing audience was like, I've already seen this 5 times. And I'll actually share it because it's hilarious what I did. I can't believe I did this. I turned myself into the Harvard ho. I'll elaborate on that because it's this is a real story. I really did this. I even called myself this. But basically, when I went to school, you know, that word Harvard has a lot of SEO, and that was a school I went to. I'm still there. I'm senior this year. But during my freshman year, I kind of by chance, my second YouTube video, I had the thumbnail. I knew thumbnails were important. I had been watching YouTube for a while, done the Facebook ads thing, you know, packaging is part of the whole thing. So I kind of took, using a tripod, a picture of me laying in bed, but you could like just see like the little bit of man chest, you know, a little bit of it right at the tail of it. And I was like, it's funny. And then I had like the backpack too. So it kind of looked like first day of school. Like, is he sleeping through class? I had no idea. I thought like, this is kind of like silly, but I'll try it. But after like 9 videos or so, that one was like clearly outperforming the rest, like very, very clear. So I was like, I guess I just have to like have my whole shirt off. That was my solution. Yeah. So I swear, this is what I did. It's just real. Every single video for a single month, I was uploading too. Like, talk about like authenticity. I abandoned that. I was like, I came into YouTube with like a great mindset. Like, I want to be me. I want to show people my life. But I was like, let's come up with 4 vlogs a week. Like, if that last one got 10,000 views, 4 a week is going to be great. So I'm now pumping out more content, right? And then each thumbnail is like absurd. Like, there was one thumbnail where I got my roommate. I'm like, hey man, I need your help right now. And it's snowing. And I like rip off my shirt in the middle of Harvard Yard. And it's like a snowstorm. I'm like, this is going to be this one. And it's a thumbnail of me shirtless. Ridiculous. But guess what? 1 out of 10. You know, it was 1 out of 10. So I was so focused on the short term. I'm like, oh, it's getting views, right? So we keep going. And then this like peaks where I remember this day. And it was like probably like, I think it was, this is sad to say, but it was probably the best I've ever felt in my life. Because the high was so just wow. We got 28,000 views in one day off of like long form on YouTube. I made, I think, right around $120 in AdSense. And I was like, holy moly. Like, I'm not even selling merch yet. I'm doing nothing but just this, like $120. What? This is 10 weeks into my journey. I was floored. So I remember telling my friend, like, we're going to make it, man. And immediately, like, it was almost like right after that, you start to see the views start to drop a little bit. And I was like, oh no, what's happening? So then I like panicked and went into like overdrive. So like, you thought before I was being weird. Oh, we get really weird. But then I was like, well, what are we like, how do we get people to click? I was so focused on getting people to click and watch. So I was like, let me do a live essay reaction video where I was so stressed at this point in my life that this is a true story. I slept through a midterm at my school and totally failed it because I was like up late trying to both write and do YouTube. And I wasn't like going to put that story out into the world. I guess I'm sharing it now, but I'm like, but like at this moment, I'm like, I think this is a good YouTube video. So I did a YouTube video of me pretending like I hadn't seen that score yet. And then like hyping up this essay and like, it was like 7 or 8 minutes and had really good retention. I'm not going to lie. It had like 60% retention on a very boring video where I'm just like hyping up this one essay opening. And then I get to the end and it's like failed. And honestly, it was like kind of funny, but people were like, what the heck? So that was my one, again, desperate attempt of like, let's get the views back up. Like that'll easily blow up, right? That'll go viral. It didn't. Then I was like, whew, I'm like, we're down bad, man. Like my actual finals for school were coming up. And I'm like, we had planned a whole road trip to try and make our lives even more viral. We were going to go road trip a bus across the country. And I'm like, the money we're making now, we're now down to like $20 a day in AdSense. It had dropped from that peak. I'm like, we're in a bad place. We need a win. So then I was like, this is actually probably not one of my darker moments, which is sad, but it was definitely a dark moment. I was like, let's come up with a video that I know they're going to click on, that I know they're going to have to watch, which is me admitting to cheating on a test at Harvard, which I didn't even do. It was all a lie, but I was willing to fabricate me cheating to try and do, this is crazy. This is nuts. This is actually nuts. I made up a total lie that I cheated on a test and had this whole like little production. And even like the thumbnail was like my brother dressed up as a teacher peeking in through the door. Like it was all an act. It was crazy. And I had done all this to try and once again, like get views. Like I was just so focused on like reaching, like if this video gets like 10 million views, like that'd be wild. And like, this has everything. Someone's admitting to cheating on a test live. But the thing is this, one, like I'm not a Hollywood actor. So people had to have at this point been like, this is a little inauthentic. But then the second point, which was even bigger, was that my existing audience who came there to watch me, like sure, there was a little bit of Manchester in that one thumbnail and I'm sure they engaged people, but that's not why they came there. But right, I didn't take the time to figure that out. I just was focused on like getting more, getting more, getting more. That by the end, I had created this audience that was like, unbelievably like not what I ever wanted, was also didn't even trust me anymore. And there's still people, like I had hundreds of DMs too. I had 400 DMs during this time period from fans on Instagram. And I was so stressed out that I didn't respond to any of them. Huge mistake. I should have just talked to my fans. I should have been in there responding to them, being like, hey, thanks for watching the videos. I wasn't even taking the time to see the people who were watching my videos when they were reaching out to me in unbelievable droves, dozens and dozens of emails. Instead, I was just so focused on like the next hit that like my mind went to a really weird place. And I mean, my only regret is that I didn't slow down and take a break while all that was going on, because it was a mistake. And honestly, if I was to give any advice to people, it's maybe you don't want to blow up. Like maybe not having that ridiculous high, that ridiculous surge of like, it's an incredible feeling, but it's also really, really hard to manage. Like if I had had more time to mature as a creator, as a person, I would have been prepared for that. I'm prepared for that now, I think in a very, you know, definite way, but also at the same time, I'm prepared for that because I don't even really care about that. Like if that happens, whatever, but like, that's not the game I'm playing. But yeah, that happened to me and it was like the worst thing that could have happened to me. And let me tell you, the $1,500 I made in AdSense, not worth it at all for what I put myself through mentally. But at the time, you know, I thought I was right. And I thought that like I was going to hit the ultimate jackpot. And the only thing next was like $15,000 a month, right? Let's 10X from here. Yeah. That didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, do you feel like now you have kind of like a more clearer lens of like who you want your audience to be, like who you're trying to speak to and like who you want to be drawing to you with your content?
I mean, now it's like, it just changed so much. Like now, yes, but it's also changed like so drastically that it's like almost funny. Cause like I was, again, at that time, I really secretly still wanted sci-fi readers to be watching me. I had a lot of people actually go and read my books based on my YouTube videos without them even being related to it, because they were connected to me, because I was trying to be me in many moments, although it obviously strayed from that. But I now want people to come to me and to watch my content because they're interested in being able to you know, grow a community as an author and, you know, make a living in this new age of the creator economy. That's the audience I'm focused on building right now because I've devoted my life to Reem. But after that, if you were to ask me that question immediately after, I had pivoted my audience to focus more on like truly like viral content, which is when the stories get even crazier there. They're really funny, but they're really scary too. And it really took me coming around to like probably another year after to be like, yeah, this is again, not the path I want to be going down. And I just wanted to like now help people show them there's another way. But for me personally, in my fiction, who do I want reading my fiction? Who do I want paying attention to me? Really people who are entrepreneurs, scientists, engineers, policymakers who are interested in the future. And to be frank, like I am so young that I have like my whole life to build that audience, which is how I feel about it now, that like I am playing like a decades long game, and everything I do in my life feeds experience for me that helps me learn how to build better futures and help others to build better futures. And to be frank, I wanted that when I was young too. Like that was always the dream, the vision, but I always thought like I had to sacrifice myself to get there. Like somehow I had to like get to the million followers or get to that point, and then I would find the audience and then I'd be able to make it work, but I had to hack my way there. It felt like that. And it felt like time was running out, but that wasn't true. And in reality, like the internet's going nowhere. None of these platforms are going anywhere. And there's enough people creating content online where, you know, it's hard enough to get discovered as it is, but it's not impossible. It really is very possible, but hacking your way to it is just going to leave you like me, like, I guess, ripping off your shirt and thumbnails and kind of like embarrassing yourself, where like I had to delete the whole channel because of how embarrassing it was. And that's sad too, because like that whole audience is gone now. Like I just ruined that relationship with everyone because of me. I did that.
Yeah. But the lessons you've gotten out of that are huge.
Wow. Well, like when you were saying you were like 15 to 18 and thinking like maybe I can't be an author and maybe this I'm not good, and you're like, you know, 18, and it's like I feel like authoring and all creative entrepreneurial endeavors are all like kind of slow games, right? Like Every year we're doing a little bit more, and it's so funny that we're all chasing like virality and these like sudden overnight successes, when really like the people I admire the most are the ones who kind of just stuck around, you know, like the people who just kept showing up and kept producing things and kept growing their audience like one super fan at a time, you know.
One super fan at a time. It's the truest thing. And we have to think of our audience as real people. And you know, the thing is, before the internet, we didn't know we had an audience unless you were at a book signing. So the concept of audience was like, oh, well, people just, you know, I guess they read my books. I have no idea. The internet made audience visible to us, which is a beautiful thing, except that it also doesn't actually make audience visible to us in a real way. If we use a lot of specific tools like, you know, Amazon KDP, we can now see we have readers. We can now see their emails. But do we see them as people? Well, not if we don't choose to. We have to like make the conscious effort to. It's a mindset where we treat our readers like people. And think about what it works, why they're in it, and what we can do for them, rather than always thinking about how can we get ahead? How can we get more? Because no reader thinks, I'm so glad I'm reading this author. If only they could have 10 more readers, then their books would be so much better. They're not thinking that. And
it's true.
No one really thinks that. Like they might want to tell other people, but they're not telling them because, oh, I'm going to tell all these people, and like together we're going to make their work better. Like right. That's not that isn't the fan psychology. It's like, I want to share things with people because it made me happy and it's going to make them happy too. I'm maybe going to get some clout socially too, because if they like an experience I recommended, then that's a great thing. But it's not like it's about them at the end of the day. And we always think about it from us. And I think I was creating selfishly because I had gotten caught up in the dream of being a full-time writer when I didn't realize that I already was an author. I already was a storyteller. I already was doing it. And I didn't actually let myself feel that and be that, and was still thinking I had to role play as something else to get there. And if I had only had that confidence and self-worth from day one, I mean, well, I'm glad I have it now. And I hope people listening can get there, because it's a dangerous game when you're not there.
I love that you use the term storyteller so much, because it's true. Like if you come back to that being your foundation, storytelling can come into everything that we do. You know, like that word storyteller has come to me so many times. And it's the word that always stops me and makes me go, because like I've had people, I did stand up for a very small period of time in LA, and I had somebody grab me and go, "You're a storyteller." And that was how I ended up writing my first book. And then when I was here redoing my website for our PR firm, I sat down and went and do a page one day. And I wrote a whole page about storytelling and how we tell people's story through the PR that I was doing. And I remember sitting there that day and getting really emotional, thinking, I'm not telling any stories, but then realized, yes, I am. I'm telling these people's stories, like just stopping. And I think even if somebody has to label themselves as anything that's doing all of these things, be a storyteller. Like, tell the story to your social media, tell the story to your community who are also your readers, you know, be the storyteller in your newsletter, show up and just tell your stories.
That's how I wanted to brand myself when I was thinking about my brand, when I was like 16, 15 years old. I wanted to consider myself a 21st century storyteller, and I still do, but it's very tough when, like, you know, I just want to like emphasize that believing that and saying that are two different things, and believing that and feeling that in your bones that like you are a storyteller takes work. It takes personal work on, you know, figuring out what brought you to storytelling, what inspires you to create, and what maybe are some of the things that are holding you back. What are some of your blockers from your creativity moments, and what are your fears about that, and how can you center and ground yourself? And I know for me, it was really like three things that did it for me. It really helped me and continue to help me. One is therapy. I think therapy is great personally, but you know, folks don't do or don't go. I think someone should have something in their life where they're reflecting regularly outside of their writing. For me, writing was my therapy until it became a business. And then it wasn't just about me. It was about my readers. And that outlet that was just for me now had to be shared with the world, which is beautiful, except I didn't realize for me just how important writing was in and of itself. And I think that as a professional author now, people listening, you might actually be like me where you use writing as your therapy. But if that's now a different relationship, which is okay because you want to create for your readers too and yourself, you need to still have something in your life that serves that purpose. Another one was meditation. The world's loud. Our brains are noisy. I needed to take something where I could take a step back. And the third thing was a book that totally changed my life. And it's called The Story Paradox by Jonathan Gottschall. And that was the book that really switched everything for me. I felt very lost after going through now, I guess at that point, it was like 4 years of trying to make it as a creative, really spending every dollar of my savings, every time, minute of like everything was just focused on like turning myself into someone who could like live out this dream of being a storyteller full time. Right. And then feeling like I tried a lot, and I guess it went well in some places, went better than I could expect in others, and it went way worse in others. And at the end of the day, I felt like I lost myself. Like my life became a story, and I didn't know where my life was anymore. But then I read this book, and it changed everything for me. And it really, I recommend people read it because it's so good. It just changed my life. But the big takeaway for me was that the systems that we have right now to create stories and disseminate stories have completely shifted in the last 50 years in our society, and culturally we haven't even close to caught up to it. And we're all like in this really weird state now of being like, well, we've always been storytellers as humans, but now our stories can reach anyone in the world in a second. And that's like the most wild, socially disruptive thing ever. And the whole book, like there's six chapters in the book, and one of the chapters is called Storytellers of the World. And I'd never actually heard that before. And then I like read Plato's Republic and was like seeing him banning the poets. And I'm like, there's something like, this is true. Like storytellers really do rule the world, and we're all storytellers now. And that means we have a responsibility. Like it's not just about like going back to this point, like it's not about the views anymore. Like it's about something way bigger than this. Like we are changing the fabric of society, how our readers' minds work and how our minds work, our perception of the world. When I read this book, I was like, wow, like sometimes it did just feel like fun and games, like, oh, we're just kind of creating like fiction and I hope they read it and I hope it's a nice escape. But like the neuroscience doesn't back that up. The story science doesn't back that up, which is what this guy talks all about. And how our world works doesn't back that up. Like we actually are like creating everything. And if that's the case, then like I need to take what I'm doing way more seriously. And not from the perspective of like, you know, I have some high moral ground, but that there's a bigger purpose here and a bigger metric beyond than what, you know, the one story that like Jeff Bezos wants us all to believe or Mark Zuckerberg wants us all to believe. Like, we have to have an agency of ourselves that's beyond this like stupid word, like the algorithm. Like there's something more to it all than that. And we have to like feel that in our bones for us to really take a step forward as a culture and as a society here, because we know what we've had now. Stories are tearing us apart. Never mind politics here, but even our community as authors, like we can pit ourselves against each other all the time. It's like, no, like we're really in this together. And we have to realize that, we have to feel that and do that. And I think that, unfortunately, and this guy talks about that, the systems that we have been designed to pit ourselves against each other. Like, that was what they are. And we now have to think and rethink and reshape these systems. And we all play a role in that. And I think that's what a lot of this podcast is about, like sustainable socials, right? Yeah. It's like doing that. And I think that work is more important now than ever.
Wow, Michael.
That was so wonderful.
Yeah. That's
like, we 1,000,000% agree. That's kind of why we started this podcast, was we saw so many of our friends kind of getting trapped in these cycles and needing to break out of them and forgetting about the relationships and the connections and the people behind things and kind of getting pulled in too many like of these big metrics and different directions. And we really wanted to kind of bring it back to like the more human side of things.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for giving us your time today. It has been, I could sit here for 4 more hours.
I know.
It's like, I'm like, in my head, I'm like,
all of your time, but at you some are point,
like, need to like mind meld with you again some other time, because you're just, I have like 20 million other questions, but we just don't have all the time in the world right now. But all I can,
and as well, like about how all of what you're saying is applied to Ream and this kind of more intimate platform where you're really building those relationships and giving people directly what they want, and you know, all of those sorts of things, like moving that kind of philosophy into action.
Yeah, it's like, Michael, would you please let the people listening or watching this know where they can find you now, so that they're able to follow you?
Yes, if you listen to all this and are like, wow, this guy isn't completely insane. If you want more,
I think everybody's going to dig it. They're all going to be like, yep.
They're going to understand. I 100%
agree.
I feel those.
I think there's not enough honesty in this world, so I just try and be as straightforward as possible about things. But you can find me at really subscriptionsforauthors.com is the home of everything I do. I work with Amelia Rose on that, who, she's an incredible person, incredible author, who I met because she used to be making six figures a year on Patreon, but has now transitioned that audience to Ream, which we kind of tried to solve all the problems that she's facing on that platform and built a better version of, you know, connecting with the community, having a sustainable business model and a sustainable publishing model all in one place. So Subscriptions for Authors is our home, where we like have a podcast there. We educate authors with blogs. We have a free book. There's just all that there. We even have a Facebook group that you can join, but the home for that is subscriptionsforauthors.com. And then Ream is reamstories.com. Definitely, that's a great place to check out if you're actually interested in starting a subscription, and totally free to get started there. And then my website is M Evans and then inked, like inked.com. And I have some blogs on my site that dive pretty deep into my story. So if you like were like, oh wow, like, what happened to this kid, like with a bus and road trip, and you want to hear more, I have a lot of blogs in there that kind of talk about some of my reflections in the moment about that. And some, I think, valuable takeaways. So those are kind of like all the different places, and yeah, a little bit more about me.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And we'll also have all of that down below. We'll have links so that you can go and find Michael and Ream and the Subscriptions for Authors group on Facebook. And as someone who is in that group, I highly recommend it. Lot of knowledge flowing over there constantly. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
All right, you guys, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Sustainable Socials podcast. If you'd like even more social media and marketing support, mini coaching, one-on-one coaching, and a private online community, you can join us at patreon.com/sustainablesocials.
And we'll see you next time.